And I literally said, I'm going to Google that shit. I am going to sit down and I'm going to Google, where do lesbians go for fun?
Hi, my name is Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So, you've listened to the show before, you know I don't have to tell you that I love hearing people's stories about spaces that they fell in love with and where they found themselves and where they danced and flirted and yada, yada, yada. But do you know what else I really love? I love hearing people complain about queer spaces and talking about those ones that they hated and they just couldn't wait to get out of. And hate is maybe too strong a word to describe the experience that this week's guest had, but I still enjoyed hearing about how the sticky floors and the dark, dank bar were just not up their alley at all. And whose alley is it that we were not up? I should have thought that through. Well, it is Lane the Auctionista, who joined me to talk about Seven, the aforementioned dark bar that was found in London, Ontario, Canada. Ooh, we're back to Canada. Let's find out some more. So, you came out quite late in life.
I did. I wish I hadn't had that experience, but I did. I was over 40. I was 41, maybe 42 at the time. So, yeah, we were kind of like late to the party, both of us. So, we were just trying to figure out how do we find the party and get included in the party. So where do lesbians go for fun? We had no idea. So
Wait. Before we get there, I don't want to sound rude when I ask this, and it might sound rude, but why did it take so long?
Well, I'm going to say it took long because it's of societal expectations. I'm a child of the 1960s. I was born in 62. I think I knew that, I mean, I did know that I was different by the time I was 7 years old. You know, I felt things inside myself for sure. And I just kept on doing life the way society expected. And in Toronto, Ontario, in my life, in my circumstances, there was no discussion about what gay is or what homosexuality is. I mean, it was not even a discussion point. And if there was a discussion, it was incredibly abrasive and derogatory. So the last thing you're going to do is put yourself in that space. So I carried on with life. I got married, had children, and I knew the entire time inside myself, I was just keeping it from bubbling up, just pushing it down, pushing it down. Wow. And then when my marriage ended, I dated a couple of men and I'm like, Lane, this is not going to work. This is not who you are. This is not who you need to be with. And I just thought, okay, maybe the right person will come along. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I will not be untrue to myself any longer. And that was right around the time that I met Sue, right? It was about 40 years old.
So do you remember, like, was there a moment when you were like, ah, no, I need to do this differently? Or was it just accumulation of little moments?
It was a moment. I was with this guy that I had been dating for a while, just a really nice human being, but the attraction was not there. It was not happening not happening for me. And that was it. I had to end it with him and say, I can't do this anymore. It's not working for me. So off you go and off I go. Yeah, and that was it. And I didn't know where to take it from there. I my kids were not that old at the time, and I was very focused on them and not so much focused on me. And just like life goes, sometimes shit just falls into your lap when you're least expecting it.
Oh, it feels like you're setting me up for the next question. What shit landed in your lap? Oh, wait. Are we talking about your partner?
Yeah, we are.
Did I just call your partner shit?
Yeah, no, she is the most amazing shit in the world. At that time in my life, I was on the hunt for a new job. And I had applied for a job, and she interviewed me. And
you thought, I know how to get this job. I'm going to turn on the charm.
I could not take my eyes off those leopard print stockings that she wore to that interview. Ooh. And I'm sure I answered all the questions very well. I was not quite knowledgeable in that field. And I just walked away from that interview thinking, I think I just found my person. I literally did.
Wow. Mm. And had you ever felt that before?
Never. This was a brand new feeling, and my heart was racing. I was thirsty. I was, my brain was whirling, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way in hell that I qualify or there's going to be interest, because she was in a relationship. And
how did you know that from the interview?
I saw the signs. You can tell. I don't know.
She had a tattoo on her forehead saying, I'm in a relationship.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We just get to, I don't know. I just knew it. And if I didn't know it, maybe I assumed it because I thought, what a catch this person is. Whoever the lucky man or human is who has her. And I thought, well, that's, I got to just start with being friends. So let's hope to God I get this job and that we can become friends anyway. Well, and that's...
Oh, wow. And so how long did you have to wait to find out about the outcome of the interview?
I waited while she was heading on holidays. Oh, that's how I knew. She and her husband were heading on holidays, I think, after that interview for a couple of weeks. And then she had said, you'll find out. We have a couple more interviews to do, and then I will hear from her.
So how agonizing was it to wait?
It was like, okay, 9 more days to go, 8 more days to go, 7 more days to go. I had a very good feeling that I was going to nail the job.
I see what you did.
Nail the job. And I did. And I got the job, and I couldn't have been happier. But I walked in that first day thinking, well, okay, business only. Just keep your thoughts to yourself, Lane. Just keep them inside, because we don't know the full situation here. We're just going to,
And how long did that last?
Oh, gosh. We were eating from the same spoon within 6 weeks. And that's the truth.
Wait, that's not a euphemism, is it? Eating from the same spoon. Like you just were eating from the same
spoon.
We
were literally eating from the same spoon. I said, oh, you just opened your fruit cup. You don't have a spoon. Would you like to use mine that I just licked? And she took it and started eating from it. And I thought, there it is. There it is.
So that's not just evidence that she's too lazy to get up and get a spoon.
Oh, no, no.
That's
no.
Evidence that she's into you.
Yeah. Well, I think even within that first 6 weeks, we had very quickly established that we enjoy the same things. We have the same, hobbies. We riffed off each other really well. And here's the crazy part. There is a Polaroid snapshot of us. I think that was taken probably the first month I worked there, and we actually owned the same brand of running shoe, same color. We look like twins. And you know what they say about lesbians? It's the twinning situation, right? You know that they all look the same, right? short hair, glasses, you know, you've got your Keens for, you've got your, you know, your weekend Keens, you've got your fancy Keens, you've got, you know.
What's a Keen?
Oh, you don't know what that is. Oh, you'll have to look it up. It's a lesbian footwear.
Okay.
Practical. And yeah, so it was, there were all these little signs. Okay. There were just these little, yeah. And I knew something was happening, but it took time. It took time though.
What, so whilst this was happening, did you think, or how, like, were you also processing, like, I might not be heterosexual? Or was it that, like, it's just this person that I'm attracted to?
Oh, I knew I wasn't heterosexual. I knew that I was, what I called it then was, like, I am a lesbian. For sure.
Okay.
100%. I identify as non-binary now, but, yeah, I knew it. I knew it. And there was no question in my mind. I knew. I just didn't know where to go with finding them and looking for them.
But how did you, like, you know, I can tell you are a super professional person. So how do you tell the person that interviewed you for your job, oh, hey, by the way, I'd quite fancy you and maybe we could go into the stationery cupboard and finger bang each other?
Well, I took it a little slower than that. I said, you know, we just get along so well. I can see that we're fast friends. I said, how would you like to go to a movie sometime? And she said, I would love to, Lane. And that's how it all started. And
what movie did you suggest?
We went to see the Frida Kahlo movie. And we went on a Friday night in December, and the snow was gently falling. It was like a Harlequin romance, a rom-com made by Hallmark. It was the perfect evening. And there is literally a 14-second lesbian love scene in that movie. And it went on and on for me. I just watched that scene and I thought, I wish that was us. And I just kind of thought that. I got all tingly and warm inside. And we decided to go for a martini afterwards, have a little drinky poo. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I said, I had such an enjoyable evening with you tonight. Was so lovely. Again, I don't want to be pushy. And she leaned over and she said to me, I really want to be with you. And I said, hold it. Just stop right there. Because the whole room had turned into this spinning vignette for me. I said, I need clarification on what I want to be with you means. What does that mean? Does that mean you want to be with me, like you want to hang out with me, you want to be my friend? What does it mean? And she clarified and she said, no, I want to be with you. And then she leaned over and she kissed me. And I knew in that moment, that was it. This is happening. This is starting. And I have eyes for nobody else. And that was 20 years ago, and nothing has changed for me, how I feel about her. It is just as magical now as it was 20 years ago. In fact, it's better because we have gone through life as regular people who have shit and trauma and having to overcome difficult times. We have done this together. Arm in arm, we are so strong. We know each other so well. We have, neither of us has ever changed, has said to the other person, oh, you know what would make this even better? If you changed your hair, if you did this, or how about none of that?
That's because you've got the same hair and the same shoes and the same clothes.
It's so true. And, you know, I have two children and she is the mother of these two children as well. My kids have two moms. So it's been a beautiful thing. I am a very monogamous kind of person. I I feel secure in that. I feel safety in that. So it's been remarkable. It's been remarkable.
But, and this line of questioning just betrays the fact that I'm a total slut. You've never, ever slept with another woman?
No.
Wow.
I don't want to. Wow.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have no interest to. I trust Sue completely. And I have never had this sense that I want to explore or experience anybody else's body. I'm a very loyal person. We're married and I'm committed. And if I was to do that, I would be not married to Sue anymore. And I don't want that. And there will be none of that until one of us is left alone, I guess, and to make those decisions. But no, I've never had a desire to explore anything else because I'm entirely content and head over heels in love.
So that was like the moment that it happened. That was the moment when you were both like, yeah, this might be a thing. And I have to say, I really admire your quest for clarity in that. Like, just like, no, you need to actually like unpack that. I think that's top marks for that. What I'm interested in though is the weeks and months after that. What happened? And were you as confident and as locked in throughout that whole period?
So a lot happened. I lost my mother to ovarian cancer about three months after this evening out. And this was a huge, huge moment in my life because I wasn't out to my family. I had this friend, Sue. We worked together. That's all fine. But the night that my mother passed away, my sister, my brother-in-law, we went to my parents' place to, you know, we're grief-stricken. It was a completely unexpected passing. And I was there alone. Sue was actually with my kids, looking after them, while we're sorting out our feelings and just the shell shock of all of this. And my brother-in-law said, I really think Sue should be here. And I was like, she's just a friend. She's just a friend. It's all good. And my sister's like, Lane, come on. What the fuck? Like, come on. You know, like, you think we're blind. You think we're stupid. I've known all my life that you're gay, but finally you're being true to yourself. She says, I'm going to go talk to Daddy, and I'll be right back. And I said, okay, you can go talk. You can do the thing. So she talks to my dad. She comes out and she said, Daddy would like to talk to you. And I'm like, okay, here it is. This is the moment. This is it. So he sits me down. We're in the den. And he said, honey, your sister told me about Sue and that you're a couple. And he says, I'm just really, really disappointed. And I thought, here it comes. He says, I am so disappointed that you felt that you could not come to Mummy and I and share this relationship because this changes nothing. You're our child. We love you. You're the best kid in the world. So call her, get her over here because she is a part of this family and she's going to be a part of this going forward. And that was how it all came out to my family. And I thought, holy shit, it's not that easy for so many folks. And I know that. But for me, it was a beautiful moment.
And did you then go and tell your sister that your dad just said that you were the best kid in the world?
Yeah. And I said, told ya. told ya. But that gave me instant, it released all the stress and the anguish of keeping this big, massive secret. Because I thought, if my family can love me, other people can love me too, if I tell them this. So our relationship kept progressing, and eventually Sue had to share with her family. And, you know, with her parents, it was very similar. I think one of her siblings had a little bit of a tougher time with it, but, you know, worked their way through. And my kids adored her because, you know, I introduced her as my friend and, you know, we had so much fun together in those early days. But honestly, it was that simple. It was that simple.
And there was never any moment in it where you were like, is this the right thing?
No.
Oh, amazing.
Never, never, never. Sue and I have so much trust, respect, caring, compassion for each other. You know, we were both in heterosexual relationships, and we've found ourselves. We feel that we are the two luckiest people on earth. We were so grateful that, you know, we found each other when we did, and we still have this whole life ahead of us to share and experience. And, you know, for me, did I lose some friends? Yeah, that's okay. But I also gained some friends and I gained a new community. So
what can often happen when you're a baby queer and you're just coming out is that you date someone who's maybe got a bit more experience on the scene, or you find friends who've got a bit more experience on the scene, and they can kind of show you the way and open up the doors to the queerdom. But for the two of you, who had both been in heterosexual relationships up until then and had not had any experience of the sea of lesbian bounties, how did you figure it out? Like, I mean, you already had the shoes, but how were you like, okay, well, what do I do now?
Well, I said, honey, there's got to be others like us out there.
I read it on the news.
I've heard of them. So I said, we have to figure this out. We have to find a way to find community. And we really didn't know where to begin. And I literally said, I'm going to Google that shit. I am gonna sit down and I'm gonna Google, where do lesbians go for fun? And immediately, I'm not even kidding you.
Said the cat adoption center.
That's right. Oh my God. Yes, exactly. Exactly. The cat adoption center. Oh my God. I love that. Joni Mitchell, Tegan and Sarah. Yeah. Give them all to me. Give them all to me. I want them all. And immediately that what popped up on the computer screen was the London Lesbian Film Festival, and that is London, Ontario, Canada, which is just a stone's throw away from where we lived. And I was like, we're gonna go there.
And were you just like steadfast, yep, this is it, this is us, we're off? Or were you like, oh, this is a bit scary?
Nope. I said, it's, you know what, we've got each other. We can cover off each other. We'll go and check it out. We're going to book the hotel. We're going to get the weekend passes. And we are going in all keens forward. All four keens forward, you know, and we are going to go to all the little meet and greets and the pubs. And we're going to do everything. We're going to just soak it all up. What a fucking weekend that was.
You can't just say what a fucking weekend that was and leave it there. You have to elaborate. Why was it a fucking weekend?
Well, who knew? Who knew that London, Ontario, one of the most conservative cities in Ontario, it's a nice insurance town. All you see is like the typical stereotype of insurance salesperson, you know, the little overcoat, the little black attaché case. Very conservative town, insurance town, but hosts the largest lesbian film festival in North America.
Oh,
crazy.
Wow.
What is going on here? So, sure, we arrive, and sure enough, there they all are, and it's what they called lesbian Christmas. Lesbian Christmas. Hundreds and hundreds. And I'm talking from across Canada, you know, and the states too. I mean, they were driving up from Michigan and New York State, and they were coming from everywhere. I think even we have a couple of folks from the UK there too. Like, it was, yeah, it was a pilgrimage. It was an absolute pilgrimage. And here we are two newbies navigating this thing.
So what happens then when you've denied yourself of lesbians for your entire life, and then you throw yourself into this? It is a sea of lesbians.
It's a sea of lesbians. And you know what? The crazy thing is, of course, I knew nothing at the time about what's a femme, what's a butch, the language. I knew nothing about that. Absolutely nothing. And the first evening, there was a dance party. And we walked in, no word of a lie, we walked in, we looked around, and it seemed like everybody knew everybody. And we were we were just these two people that were like, okay, how are we going to navigate this? And here's an interesting story. We walk in, and the first table we see, a bunch of gals sitting there, and we walk towards them, and one of them said, hey, are you two new in town? And we're like, oh, fuck, you have no idea how new we are. Because... we're just not new in town. We are new to this whole world. And one of them said, you know what? Sit down. Come join us at our table. And that person who said that, we just got back from a Mexico trip with them. We are extremely close friends. And she has two 16-year-old children now. And that first person we met, we have a very close relationship. And that was the beginning of it. That was the beginning. We saw shit there that weekend that it's like, wow, this is fucking wild. This is amazing. This is like a whole culture unto itself.
So when you say wild, are you talking about the movies or are you talking about what happened outside of the movies?
Well, the movies. It's like lesbian erotica. It's like, what the hell is... Neither of us had never seen anything like that. And it was... some of it was raunchy. Some of it was very passionate and, cinematic, so to speak. I think it was just this camaraderie that was just so blatantly obvious. Just... women of all shapes and sizes, women who are clearly, comfortable to be themselves, to represent, to dress, the drag shows, all the stuff that was happening. Mm. It was incredibly empowering, incredibly validating, and it felt safe. Sue and I live outside of Toronto, and I remember early on in our relationship, we're like, wouldn't it be nice to just go somewhere and walk down the street and hold hands? Let's Google that shit. Let's see where we can do that. Where do lesbians go that can hold hands? Bam! Toronto! We're gonna go to the beaches. So we drove to Toronto, fucking parked the car, we got out onto the sidewalk, and I said, hold my hand. We are gonna walk down the street, and we are gonna hold hands, and we're gonna feel okay about it. Like, Kay, this is how it was for us. That's not even that long ago.
Well, I mean, that's what it's like for tons of people, though. That first moment when you're like, yeah, I'm gonna do this, even though my body is saying, don't do it because people are looking at you, don't do it because people are gonna yell abuse at you, I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna take up space. That is fucking terrifying.
It is. It felt so good, though. It felt so good. After 4 decades or 3.5 decades for me of hiding and keeping it in the closet and not feeling safe, that burden was beginning to lift. That burden was lifting.
And so when you hold hands in public now, do you still get those thoughts, those little like, oh, is someone looking? Is this all right for me to do? Or are you just completely over it now?
Well, I'm so over it now. And I'm hoping that people are looking. Because, we want to love who we want to love. We want to normalize that, And I work every day in some capacity, one little step at a time to do that.
Mm. Okay, somehow we ended up on the beaches of Toronto when we're supposed to be in London, Ontario. I love saying London, Ontario. It's just fun. It's fun to say in that order. Anyway, where does Seven come in to play, which is what we're here to talk about today?
That's right. So Seven was located almost right across the street from this venue where we had that opening night party. Somebody had said, hey, we're going to be at Seven. Why don't you and Sue come by to Seven and have a drink with us? And I'm like, yes, yes, and yes. So the problem was I couldn't find the front fucking door to Seven because the whole building, the front of the building was black. Everything was black. It was like, we don't want anybody to know that Seven exists. We don't want anybody knowing where the door to Seven is because we don't want the wrong people coming in. I was like, where the fuck is the door to this place? We found the door and we walked in and there was the gal that we had met and she was there. So I thought, okay, this is great. As I lifted my keen off the sticky floor, you know, God knows what was on those floors. The place was so dark. It was dark and dank. It felt grubby, a little dirty inside. But it was like, okay, I'm seeing a lot of butches here. I'm seeing people that I saw the other night, and this must be okay. But that was the first time I had been in like what we would call a dive bar. Never, you know? The space kind of felt like how I felt in my mind about being queer before I came out. It's just like dark, a little sticky, a little uncomfortable, you know, not bright, not a celebratory dance space with, you know, it wasn't that at all. It was a hideout. So there's this kind of weird kind of juxtaposition for me, right? It's like I want to go in there, but I'm going into this dark hideaway space that's kind of grubby and dirty, but somehow it feels safe. Strange sensation.
So are you saying that the dark and grubby place is a good thing or not a good thing or both?
It was the only thing, but I would say no, it's not. It's because you have this sense that you are in the shadows, that's where you belong is in the shadows. You know, it's...
But sometimes it's fun in the shadows.
I guess. I'm not a shadow kind of person, though. That is not my comfort place.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like, okay, this is interesting. And if this is how it is and this is the place where people go, sure, we can do that. I found discomfort in there. For myself.
Ah, so your preference then would be that big, bright, like...
Studio 54, neon signs, yes.
Disco ball.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Celebration. But that's not what it was. And it wasn't until many, many years later that London, Ontario opened a gay bar called Lavish, which actually was that. Very bright and, you know, the pounding music and very celebratory, very pride-ish kind of a space. But that came much later.
So if that's the case, why did you want to talk about Seven?
Because it was my first step into gay space after coming out. It was like, this was the beginning. This was the start of what is out there. Where do I find community? Where do we find community? What does that look like? What does that feel like? I will never forget it. I will never forget it. And I thought, wow, is this the best we can do? Or is this the best that there is? Because if there is, holy shit, we got some
Maybe
work.
Maybe I'm not a lesbian after all.
We got some work to do, kids. We got some work to do. And, you know, it's interesting because during that weekend, there was the parade of lesbians, because we'd be going from one venue to the next venue, and it was just a mass of lesbians walking together. So there was this comfort in numbers. There was this security in numbers. And then you go into this dank, dark space, and it's like, it just all seemed very confusing.
I think we're coming from different places, because I like those dank, dark places where there's a mysterious stickiness on the floor.
No, I have a little OCD, so I don't really like the dirty, sticky places at all. You know, I'm a bit of a dandy. I have indoor shoes and outdoor shoes, Kay. And you know, my
that's just sensible.
It is, and I don't like feeling dirty and muddy.
Not even like on a night out where it's like, oh, this is dangerous. And no, I'm not going to convince you of anything, am I?
No. I tried it. I tried it again. I tried it again. I went to a bar in Toronto and to see a band called Vag Halen. Vag Halen. I walked into this bar with a couple of friends. Sue was, I don't know where she was at the time. I think she was working in Egypt, I think, at the time. And I went into this bar with my friends, and my mind went right back to Seven. I thought, holy shit, here we are again. It's like 15 years later, and I'm in this dark, dank space. And it took me right back. And I didn't love it. I was like, am I drinking out of a clean cup or not? Do I even dare go into the washroom? So yeah, it's not my jam at all. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just agree to disagree. I think that's fine. And I can join you at the big bright nightclubs. I can enjoy that as well. So, yeah. You know, it's not like we have to never see each other again. I wanted to ask a question about the word lesbian. So obviously we talked about the London Lesbian Film Festival, and you talked about referring to yourself as a lesbian at that time. But since then, you have come out as non-binary. Was it hard letting go of the word lesbian?
No, because it wasn't feeling right anymore.
But it felt right in the first place.
It did. And I also changed my first name around that time as well. Uh-huh. So I let all of that go. It wasn't feeling right for me any longer. Mm-hmm. I think it hadn't been feeling right for a while, but I just hadn't gotten to that place where I was like, you know what? No, this is who I am, and this is how I feel about myself, and this is how I would like to represent myself. I feel like I'm in the perfect place at the perfect time in my life. I am not the same person I was when I was 20, 30, 40, or even 50. And I like myself more as every single year goes by, because I am true to myself. I represent, I dress, I do it my way, and I'm so comfortable in that space. Mm. Has it been tough at times? Sure. In my professional life, it's definitely been much more difficult than in my personal life. But you work through that stuff, and I call people out. And I'm just like, call people out in a kind way and say, hey, it's okay to make mistakes. I'm cool with that. We're all human. It's all right. But what is not cool is to not do better. So you got to do better. You got to work harder. You've got to get the pronouns right. Because when you call me she, you're not seeing me. You're not respecting. That's not how I identify. So I'm a senior citizen, right? I'm 61, and I feel that I have now the grace of time, wisdom, life learning, that I can be who I am, how I am, and also help folks understand that in a kind way.
But you ever just want to do it in a mean way?
I do that behind closed doors. Yeah, sometimes I get pissed off. I cry. There's been times when I've done a gig and it's like I've been so hurt by what's been said to me. And I usually don't, but I cry and I come home and I cry and then I get pissed off. And then I just process and work through it. But it's, it hasn't been easy at times, but it's been glorious most of the time.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we go back to the weekend, the dirty, sticky weekend.
Yeah.
And I want you to think about the you of that time and what was going on in your brain and what you were trying to figure out about yourself and the world. What do you think has been the gift of coming out later in life?
When you asked that question, my immediate response was, it wasn't a gift. I often think to myself, if I had come out sooner, if I had really been authentically myself, wouldn't that have been just a little bit happier life for me? At the same time, that didn't happen. And so I think the gift for me was that I was clear on who I was. I was clear that I wasn't going to live the second part of my life the way I lived the first part of my life. So I was committed and I was clear. And I think the greatest gift for me was finding my partner. I am a dog. I'm a dog. And when I say that, I mean, I think that there are two kinds of people. It's like the cat. So the cat person is like, oh, it's Friday night. Excellent. I'm going to get a cup of tea. I'm going to curl up on the couch and I'm going to read my book and I love my space and self-care. That is not me. That is not me. I need people. I want somebody to say, Lane, I got a ball. I got a ball. Come on. Let's go throw the ball. And I'm like, yeah. I need a person. So to find this person in the second half of my life and commit to that and be fully free as I am. So that was the greatest gift. And I think that also made me a better friend, a better mother, just a better human being, right? Because when you're completely free, then that's when we thrive, when we feel our best and we can reach our full potential.
Mm. And if you had the opportunity to go back to 7 and get your feet all sticky and squint a bit because it's really dark and you can't see what's going on, I know that you would refuse that opportunity, but let's just go with it, right? Let's just say that you're there and you come across the Lane of 20 years ago and you get the chance to give yourself some advice. What would that be?
Get the fuck over yourself. That's what I would say, because I think that I probably carried a little bit of attitude when I walked into that space. I wasn't completely free. I wasn't comfortable. And I think that was probably, maybe some people would have picked up on that. It's not my kind of space, right? The dark, dank, dirty.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not about the space. It's about the people in that space. And I think if I had not been closed off immediately to how the space looked, the physical space, then I might have had a different human experience in that room.
Oh, so I think maybe I've misunderstood, because I thought like that, yes, it was gross, and yes, you were like, I really shouldn't be here, but that you actually had fun that evening. Did you not have fun that evening?
Well, I did. I did have fun, but I felt uncomfortable as well. I felt uncomfortable as well. So I think if I could have separated those two distinct feelings, that dirty, dank space, and just like, if this was a nice, bright room, how would I be feeling differently? I think that if I had let go of that mm-hmm. physical reaction that I had about the physical space, I think my experience could have been better, and I may have gone back. I think we only went back one more time after that.
I don't know if I agree, because spaces are created in a certain way in order to attract and to repel certain people. So if it wasn't your vibe, then it wasn't your vibe, and then you just don't have to go back, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But having said that, it is really interesting that this is the space that you wanted to talk about today.
Yes.
When actually, if you had a bulldozer, you would probably go and knock that building down.
But it represents a big moment in my life.
Uh-huh.
It really, really does. It was when that door swung open, I was stepping into my future of what I really did want, right, is to find my community and exploring spaces like that. It was the first step. It's important, and I will always remember it. I can see it so clearly in my mind. I can visualize it. And that experience has made an impact on me.
Do you have any memories of those sticky floors in Seven? Or maybe sticky floors from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, then all you need to do is get in touch. I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I can't do it alone and I need your help. Go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then tell me all about what it is you got up to, you know you want to, right? And if that's all a bit too much, you're not quite ready to tell me your whole life story just yet, but you still want to say hello, why not find me on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, actually, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Lane by following them on Instagram at The Auctionista, or visiting their website, which is auctionista.ca. And no need to worry, I have all of this information included in the show notes for this episode. If you enjoyed this chat, if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast player, whichever one you're using to listen to this, or just tell other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. My name is Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.